Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and I want to play for you what, in my opinion as a filmmaker, is probably the best TV intro in terms of visual editing, sound editing around. This is just a portion of it with the voiceover by iconic actor Richard Anderson as Oscar Goldman. Better, Stronger, Faster, one of Richard Anderson's many great performances as Oscar Goldman, and we're so honored to have Richard Anderson, and we'll be back here on Richard Rossi Live with Richard Anderson and Al Doshna, who assisted in writing Richard Anderson's upcoming memoirs that are coming out this coming March 2015. However, you can pre-order at Bear Manor Media, B-E-A-R, like a grizzly bear, Manor, M-A-N-O-R, media.com. You can pre-order the book now. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Richard Anderson. Welcome, Richard Anderson. We're so grateful and honored to have you today.
Well, thank you very much, and I've really looked forward to this.
Well, we've been looking forward to it as well, and we have fans from all over the world that are emailing questions and hanging on the line, so I told them to hold on because I wanted to talk with you and Al a few moments first, and then we'll get to some of the fans that are chomping at the bit, but wow, you've had an incredible career, and the book gives such a great overview. You started acting, am I remembering right? Your first chance was in school in some plays?
That's right, yes. In junior high school, I started doing some plays. And also, I ran for student body president in the senior year of Emerson Junior High School, and everybody else, guys, were in charge of it, and they were the ones in charge of it. But then I got up and I said something that they wouldn't understand, but suddenly they heard it and went crazy. I hate war. Eleanor hates war. And I hate Eleanor. I was impersonating people. Listen to this, and I had never been in front of a camera or anything like that, and the guys that were on top of it, and you know, were they thought it would be great, they lost. But then the next morning, I was told by the manager there that you lost by 40 people, and you know what that might mean. But so I decided in high school I would learn how to do this properly, and it turned out that it did, because I was not only student body president of the high school, but they sent me things from people for jobs and other ways.
Mm. And this was back in New Jersey, right?
No.
Oh,
I was
wait,
born
you were
in
born
Jersey.
In Jersey. Oh, sorry.
Yes,
this was...
I was born in New Jersey. Because my mother was living in New York, and she wanted to be with her sister because it was cooler. I came from New York, but we came out to California, and everything we're talking about now is in Los Angeles, California.
Mm. And Al, this is such a thrill for you, because I know you, like me, are such a fan. This memoir that's coming out now, in which the listeners can get at Bear, B
BEARmannermedia.com, you interviewed Richard for a movie article, kind of just an article at first, and then it blossomed and bloomed into the fuller book. Is that how this all happened, Al?
Right. Uh-huh. I was working as a volunteer for the American Cinematheque in Los Angeles at a fan convention, and during a break I took the time to approach Richard about possibly doing an article. I've been a fan of his from way back, seen the TV shows, and one film in particular was Curse of the Faceless Man, was a particular favorite of mine. And so he agreed to do the article, but having told me how many people have encouraged him to write his life story, I noticed that the article itself kind of provided an outline for autobiography, so I suggested that to him, and so he agreed to, you know, look into the possibility, and one thing led to the other, and here we are.
My first memory, Richard, of you was in Perry Mason as a police lieutenant, and that was that one of your first, I know you were in some of the early kind of live Playhouse type of TV, but was that one of your first appearances where you were in a lot of episodes of a series?
Yes, it was, and it was the last year of the series because it was going to go into color, and they got into fighting about it, and that's why I wouldn't be doing that now. I tell you, it was amazing. Yes, every week, and I learned a lot through that, and the main thing I learned was learn the lyrics and don't bump into the furniture.
Yeah, I think, was that Spencer Tracy? That might have been.
Right, hey,
yeah.
Good for you. Yeah,
yeah, did a great job.
Yeah, well, the Metro thing, when I was in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer for four and a half years, I had opportunities to meet the ones, you know, Gary Cooper. He was very interesting. He was an interesting guy. Because when I was in New York as a boy, I used to every Saturday morning go to see Cowboys, you know. In fact, when I started the film business, I did a lot of Westerns that began to see. But I saw him, and it just amazed me because he didn't say much. He didn't talk at all. But all you could do is the things you couldn't help it. You were watching him all the time. So it turned out after I had done some live television, as you were saying, the whole town was crazy because it was live television. The studios never wanted it, as you know. So what happened was they had me come in, and everybody asked. Billy Wilder wanted me to come out for a movie. That's how it started, from live television. And in his place, they and other people had heard about me, and I ended up with a contract with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer for five years, and I spent a lot of time. But before I started that, I got an invitation to go down to Mexico City just to get away, and they heard about it, and I was there. And I looked, as I came up to the place, fella said, he was the man that took care of everything. "He's here," he said to me. I said, "Who?" He says, "Well, Cooper." So I went up and I met Cooper, and he said, "Well, let's have lunch," and fine. And I told him that I was so fond of him, and he said, "Well, I've learned a few things." I said, "Well, Coop, acting." And silence. And he says, "Well, I don't know too much about that, Dick, but don't ever get caught doing it."
Oh, that's great. Wow. Well, you are such a natural actor. I, you know, as a working actor, when I watch you work, there's such a simplicity and a kind of a just a natural minimalist quality. And, you know, in some of the early shows, you can catch the other actors acting or overacting. Was that something that came very naturally to you? Because I never see Oscar Goldman or in the films you've done, I never see you overacting or catch you acting. It's a talent for a real realism that you have.
Well, the main thing is listen. listen is what you do in a movie. When you mm-hmm. when you're doing a picture, you listen, and you just look at them, and somehow you get it out in a way that they all seem to watch, and that was with Cooper and two or three of the others, and I learned so much from it. It's a word called attitude. What's your attitude? And I have been watching you in your works, and I use that word to myself about attitude. It's the person himself. It depends upon his attitude as to coming to a point where he can be successful. And that's when I learned that you just got to do the work and enjoy it and be grateful.
Mm.
If I could add something to that.
Sure.
Spencer Tracy said, you know, about learn the lyrics and don't bump into the furniture. When you have the lines down, there's just a naturalness that comes about that where magic starts to happen, as opposed to struggling to, as all actors probably experience, struggling to learn the lines, whereas learning and nailing them down, then the naturalness comes naturally.
Hmm. I heard rumors that when I talk to some of the Bionic Woman and $6 Million Man fans, whenever your name comes up, Richard, everyone smiles and loves you, and they say that you, two rumors they say is you always had the best tan of all the actors, and number two, you didn't wear socks.
Well, that just happened one day when I was coming down on a plane, an airplane, and they stopped, and of course they opened the doors and they were shooting, and I came downstairs and I forgot to put my socks on, and I got a little call the next morning. The place went nuts. The studio went nuts. Everybody went nuts, and they said, "What in the world?" And I said, "Well, I don't wear socks often, and it's all right if this fella does it once in a while." And they never stopped on that one.
Well, you've had such a life, and this book is—it's so great that it's come out. Those of you listening, go to BearManorMedia.com and pre-order the book, BEAR, like the Grizzly Bear Manor, MANOR, Media.com. Richard Anderson, At Last a Memoir, Richard Anderson is told to Al Doshna. And you've had quite a few narrow escapes. You know, the one with the lights in the car, that was quite a close call, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And automobiles, you have to go to sleep early. That's the name of it, because those automobiles are you know, they're painful in a way. And luckily, I knew how to drive mm-hmm. cars. So I was fortunate in that area too, which made me always very careful with an automobile, and take a deep breath once in a while. Mm. Taking a deep breath. Now that's an interesting thing. You want to hear a story? Quick one.
Sure.
That famous singer. He always, when he sang. Help me with his name. I've just lost it.
Sinatra.
He's Italian. Huh? Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
I have it in my Range Rover. All four areas there. All I do is listen to him because his attitude. And I've noticed what happened, that no matter what happens when they were singing, and he was singing with an orchestra of tremendous amount, he would always finish. After it was over, he was still, you know, finishing every time. And it had to do with one thing that I learned. He took a deep breath, like this, in his ribs. And that's how he managed to stay, how's the word? He loved it, number one. And number two, he was able to make it work. And he wasn't afraid. That was the whole key. he was an amazing guy, that fella, with singing. And I think we can learn a lot in life about the idea of making sure that you know what you're doing. And we just had a big rainstorm out here, and don't drive the car.
Well, you know, I tell you, Richard.
Another thing. Oh, if I could say one other thing, that
sure.
Frank Sinatra always told a story with a song. That's what Richard mentions in the book. That was another part of it, each song.
Yeah, that's the book is fantastic, and just tremendous photos from all over the career. And I have to tell you, Richard and Al, that you know, I started on radio in '91. Have had many you know, celebrity guests, and we have not this today. We've had more calls, emails, questions coming in right now than I've ever seen. So you are beloved around the world, and so I think we better start going to them. So we'll be just everyone hold on, and we'll be back after a just a brief break for program identification. And if you want to call in, the lines I think may be all filled up, but just keep trying at 347-637-2379. So we'll be back, everyone, in just a few seconds. And you can also email in your question to richardrossilive@gmail.com. We'll be back to hear fans' questions here in a few seconds on Richard Rossi Live. Looking forward to hearing from you.
I know what you're thinking. Since the phone lines are all busy, should I or shouldn't I keep calling? Well, if I were you, I'd keep trying. Go ahead and make your day.
All right, we are back, and let's go to our first caller for Richard and Al. This is you're at the 706 area code. Teresa, you're going to be live now with Richard Anderson.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are you, ma'am?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I was watching you from the age of 8 to 12 years old, and the way that you portrayed the character of Oscar Goldman, you were kind of like, you were for sure a boss in charge, but you could be like a comrade to the Colonel Steve Austin character. But then when the Jamie Summers character came on, you were more like a protective, gentle figure, you know, protective of that character. And for me as a child watching that, I knew that your persona, Oscar Goldman, was going to go the long distance to make sure that those two were taken care of.
You know, let me ask you a question. You said it very well. When I was working with Steve, I handled him a certain way. And then when the lady came on, I had her working as hard, but I worked with her and talked to her in a different way. And it's just what you were saying.
Exactly. And, you know, and that just made it I guess more personable for myself, watching how you interacted with the other two people.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very thoughtful of you. Yeah.
Go ahead, sir. I wanted to also say thank you for getting the group back together again and doing the three movies after the series finished, and to help get that storyline, you know, completed, because that was a big deal.
That's very, very, very thoughtful of you to tell it that way. I saw nothing happening, and I saw Lindsay and Lee, and they were around. I said, wait a minute. So I went up and saw the guy that ran the studio, and I said, I think we should get a 2-hour, you know. And 2-hour worked. It went right to the skies. We ended up with doing two more. Three.
Oh, that
and
was
I
wonderful.
I produced them.
Yeah, you were the executive producer. And are you in Georgia, Teresa?
Yes, I am.
Well,
that,
we're,
that, that's where my question comes in, basically right there. And I was just wondering if you had more fondness for acting or for producing.
Well, I'll tell you, I think both. The thing I like about telling a story is a very big conscientious thing to do. And telling a story, the writer is the one that brings it in to show you. And so the producer has to decide whether this is going to work or not, production. And then the actor that they hire, he has to come in and make certain, as we discussed earlier, that he see how the audience would understand how to do this in the highest way of making film.
Mm. Wow, thank you so much, Teresa, for calling in, and we'll get to some other callers, and we appreciate so much all the fans. Along the lines of her statement about the movies, Richard, I was thrilled as well because we all were kind of rooting for Steve and Jamie to get together, and we'd throw our shoes at the set when she would be dating the other guys. You know, there were several other guys she dated on Bionic Woman. But when you finally did that and they got married, we were all, oh, it's about time.
Yes, well, you see, you play it as long as you can.
Yeah. Well, we have other callers here. This is your area code 925, first three digits 323. Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and you're live with Richard Anderson and Al Doshna.
Yes, my name is Kristen Rosevere, and I'm KR on Twitter.
Oh,
and,
you are one of the biggest Bionic fans in the world.
Yes, Kristen R on Twitter. And I've been watching The Bionic Woman forever, and I just wanted to say to Mr. Anderson, thank you for making my childhood awesome. And you were just talking about the Steve and Jamie romance. Was there any talk of having an Oscar-Jamie romance? Because I always felt like maybe there's something going on between those two characters.
You know, it was said during that time, during the time we were doing it, and many people said just what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with the chemistry of the way we worked. And I remember on one occasion she was in a jail and they were going to get her. And the way she, excuse me, the way she reacted after I helped her.
I remember that.
That was, I think, an Emmy-winning turn for Lindsay when she had the, was that where the woman impersonated her and looked like her? Deadly Ringer, I think it was.
Yeah. That's right.
But I also think about the On the Run, the final episode, and just the fabulous scenes that you had when you were defending her, and or Oscar was, you know, her name is Jamie, not Janie, and just the very touching scenes when Oscar says that he loves Jamie, and it was just, you know, fabulous acting on your end, and Wagner's as well. Just, you know, you're a tremendous actor, and I appreciate that more as an adult than I did when I was first watching it as a kid.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. This is a lovely lady that just, you know, on her Twitter, whenever The Bionic Woman and $6 Million Man air on Cozy TV and some of the other stations, she tweets, you know, different things about the show. She's a big, big fan and a wonderful person. We have some email questions coming in. Robert Ambury sent in a question online, and he had two questions. The first is, to him, Oscar's glasses, when he takes off the glasses and says, but Steve, or tells him about the mission, those glasses are like Columbo's raincoat or Archie's chair, kind of a prop that he thinks of with this classic show. And he wondered if you still have the Oscar Goldman glasses.
I'll tell you how it happened. I was having a lot of trouble at home. Just a minute, hang on. And it was work, you know, and then they asked me to come in, and I came in, and I said, I look terrible. So I put on the glasses, and that's how it started. Mm. I did what I had to do, And the producer came the next day, and he said, Richard, they love you. They love you in it. And I said, well, I'm going to continue to do what works. So, glasses.
Wow, isn't that something? We also have the Bionic Blonde has sent a message for you. She runs a big fan site called the Bionic Blonde, and she writes about all the episodes. Her name is Betsy, and she said to send her love to you. She met you once at a convention and said you probably wouldn't remember her, but she wanted to send her regards. She had to work today and wasn't able. They wouldn't let her call in from her job. But you really enjoy these conventions and fan conferences when you can get to them, huh?
Exactly. The people. The name of the game is the people. Abraham Lincoln understood that. And he was able to do it in a way that no one has or ever will again. Words. Where he put the words on everything. And in the acting, I always tried to put the words right in talking about them. And it works. It works if you remember. And when something you know, goes wrong on a set or something, the best thing you do is do nothing. That's what Cooper would have done.
Well, it's
Cooper.
So great you got to meet Cooper, one of your heroes that inspired you into acting, and that's probably how Al and I feel similar when we talk to you today. For you, Al, as writing this with Richard, you probably felt, like I say, like he did meeting some of his idols because you've been a fan for so long. What was the something that really you took away or that resonated with you or that you learned? I'm sure it was many lessons learned from just hearing Richard's story. What stuck with you in working on this, Al, with Richard?
Well, one of the lessons I learned about it was more along the lines of maturity, of just taking my time. And when we first started out, with other articles I wrote, they seemed to come together fairly quickly, and you know, I would get them out and send them off to the publisher. But Richard wanted to take a little more time with it, and he was right, because I look at some of the early drafts, and you know, they were bad. I mean, when I first met him, I saw this, that he had this kind of charm that I had never seen in any of his performances, and I thought, you know, that would sell it, and it probably would. But he took the time go through it thoroughly, especially the beginning, and it set the tone for the rest of the book, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another message.
You learn.
Oh, go ahead, Richard.
No, you read something, and he said it right. Try to find a new way to do it. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying,
Richard? We just had a message come in. This is just a hi to a family member. Some friends of your daughter, Brooke, said to pass on their regards to your family. Mark Matthew Hurd, Phil Watson, said hope that I guess they might have known her from school or something, that your daughter's doing well. I guess you have three daughters, right?
Three daughters, yes. Yeah. And they're all very interesting.
Hmm.
They're beautiful, first of all, and second, they do what they love doing.
Mm.
One has been with the White House for 6 years. She has an office there, and she does a lot of the work. I spoke to her this morning, as a matter of fact. She told me to say hello. Brooke Anderson is her name. She has an office in the White House.
Isn't that something? She's following in Oscar Goldman's footsteps in a way, huh?
Well, isn't that interesting, you know? Isn't that interesting? She called this morning and she talked. I said, I'm just waiting. She said, well, I'll call you later. I said, no, I'd like to talk with you now. And it's nice that we're bringing it up with her, because she's a type of American woman that would just understand who you are and be quiet. But when you say something, tell them everything that you can in terms of changing whatever needed to be changed. Mm-hmm. And Brooke Anderson is an extraordinary lady by doing that. And she's been with the president, and then she's going to make other arrangements, I think, coming along in politics. And she has children and loves her life with it too. I think you've made it very clear.
Wow! Well, what a tremendous tribute to you as a dad that she is involved as a diplomat and working with the White House, and kind of a female Oscar Goldman. So you kind of showed her how to carry yourself in that arena with your dual roles on Bionic Woman and $6 Million Man.
That's right. It had to show, without being rough. It has to show before showing off. It has to show that you really love what you're doing, and try to show it in a way that the audience would like it, you see.
Mm.
And I'm very grateful today to hear so much about a series that and I've been in 7 television series, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
This one always stands up, and the fact that they're doing it now is of no reason at all why not. Well, it comes on Wednesday night, and then the woman joined us. The woman was on Tuesday, and now she's there too.
Mm-hmm. My wife and I on Cozy TV, we watch, it's our Wednesday night, every Wednesday night, is we watch you for, I think, about 4 hours, because there's two
mm-hmm.
$6 Million Mans and then 2 Bionic Womans now.
Yeah, and...
although I got irritated, I saw tonight they have Fantasy Island on for some reason instead, according to their schedule, so...
Well, they probably heard about us.
I guess once in a while they do a marathon of another show, but they better get back to $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman soon, or I've called them up and complained when they do that. Actually, I've actually told them to straighten it out.
that's very exciting. Very exciting. It's a whole thing of numbers, and what's interesting about this game was. Gary Cooper and Clark Gable and all those people died at about 60 years old. They drank and smoked and everything and worked hard and everything. And the studios felt they were too old, see?
Mm.
But that isn't the case in this area. I work and I do things. But all the things that I used to do is being shown.
Mm-hmm.
It's being shown because of Netscape. Well, how do you say that? Net, what is it?
Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio sold all the pictures that were made, and they in turn, and if you look at the stock market, you'll see where they are. They're showing everything I've ever done. I go down into Beverly Hills for some reason, and they look and stare, and then I think one out of three come up and say, "Oh, Richard Anderson. There isn't a day that doesn't go by I don't see you on television."
Mm-hmm.
Right, in a way, the $6 Million Man is more popular now than when it first came out.
Mm. On the first run, that was Sunday night. Every Sunday night, me and my brothers, I'm the oldest of 5 kids, we were around that set on Sunday night on the first run, and now my wife and I here, Wednesday nights we're watching it. And I showed it to a young director, a very talented young director in his 20s. He wanted to come over and visit. And his films have been nominated for awards and everything. And he hadn't seen it. And I said, "You got to watch $6 Million Man. I want you to see when TV was shot on film and everything was done so well." and he saw it, he was like, oh my God, this is really good.
He learned something.
Yeah.
It's amazing that that today are doing that. You know, they're showing a lot of yesterday's stuff. They're showing on it, and there's one company here that sends it every month. It's called Classics Images, and you're hearing everything about yesterday. And I think they send it out every week. I don't know whether it's always every week, but I've been watching it for a long time and realizing why people watch it, because it's talking about the very things, the same thing you're just talking about.
Mm. Well, the time has just flown by. Any last words, Al, and then Richard?
Right, about just that a new wave is coming with the remake of the $6 Million Man, or the big screen adaptation with Mark Wahlberg as the $6 Million Man, or $6 Billion Man now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Al, and thank you, Richard.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much too.
You're most welcome. Oh, you're what a thrill! And by the way, all of you listening today, and God bless, and thanks again, Al, and thanks again. Richard Anderson. And by the way, all of you listening can get this book. We're out of time, so I'll try to do this real quick. If you missed the earlier, go to bearmanormedia.com, B-E-A-R, like a grizzly bear, manor, M-A-N-O-R, media.com, and get this wonderful memoir, Richard Anderson, At Last a Memoir. Richard Anderson as told to Al Doshna. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for your grace and letting me go a few moments over. We had so many questions emailing in and calling in. We couldn't even get to them all. But this link is good in perpetuity now. So share the link with any friends that were working and missed the show, because by sharing this link, they can hear a replay of the show and this wonderful retrospective on one of our great Hollywood movie actors. God bless each and every one of you.